So David Wright is not a stranger to us. We heard him last night as they presented the slides on Philippines. They worked there, and I understand in the 4 years that they were there, just four years, a church came into being. Now that's tremendous. When he said last night, too, in some places they labor for 20 years and see very little fruit. And here we find this. So David, could you come forward, please? I was going to ask you how old you were, but I won't do that, brother. That's embarrassing for you.
You might be surprised.
I might be surprised, too. But now look, where have you been? Tell us just briefly. This won't count in your time, so you'll be free.
We were 1 year in Batangas City, where we learnt the language. That's south of Manila, a provincial city. Then we're the next year, our first year as a missionary, doing missionary work. We're in Mambura, a little seaside fishing village on the South China Sea. And there we're still learning the language and just starting to do missionary work. And then we were shanghaied to Manila to do a temporary job, which became a permanent job. We were to run a mission home, which we finished up doing 2 years there. And in that time, we did a little bit of church planting.
David, have you found a wife, or are you still looking for one?
Oh, no, I've got a superb wife.
Okay.
I've got a superb mother-in-law as well, unless you misunderstand me from last night.
That's wonderful. That's what I'd like to hear. Secondly, what society were you working with?
The Overseas Missionary Fellowship, which used to be the China Inland Mission.
Keep going.
Good, thanks very much. God is very gracious to his sinful servants, and the day came in my wife and my experience when you're at the Brisbane airport and it comes over the PA to say that, you know, all passengers to Singapore and so on, please board the aircraft. And my father came to shake my hand. He was 70 at that time. And there was a quaver in his voice when he came to say goodbye. And I burst into tears. I bawled my head off. I was never more embarrassed in all my life in front of all my friends crying.
Hallelujah.
And, and so you set off. And God, as I said, is very gracious. You have this verse from the Psalms. Turn once again our fortune, Lord, as streams return in the dry south. Those who sow in tears shall reap with songs of joy. A man may go out weeping, carrying his bag of seed, but he will come back with songs of joy, carrying home his sheaves. Now I'd like to tell you of a couple of those sheaves now, and all glory to the Lord. There's quite a process from when a person sort of stands at the Brisbane airport that has led him to that point. And it might be experience in the local church, running beach missions and camps, being involved in tambourine conventions and the like, off to Bible school, doing still more study, pastoral experience in a country church or a city church, and application to the mission society, and then finally you land at the Brisbane airport and away you go. And still there's still a process before you finish up ready to begin. And you go through orientation course as far as the missionary society is concerned. Then you might do a year in language study. If you're in Japan, it might be 2 years full-time language study. And the day comes when you have to start knocking on doors and begin your missionary work. What do you do? What do you say? And how does the process sort of work out? What does the missionary actually do? Do you sort of have a great big open-air meeting in the town plaza and invite men to Christ and so on? One man on the slides last night, that's how he came to Christ. But, you know, that's only one aspect of missionary work. I want to share with you how God uses what seems to be almost accidental conversations for his glory and to be yet another block in the building of a church. My wife and I had to visit this little town of Mamburo in our language school days, and on the boat she had almost an accidental conversation with a school teacher. In the jeep later on in the journey, I sat next to Mr. Escubio, who was a returned soldier, fought against the Japanese in the war. And then 6 months later, lo and behold, we were designated to that village. And who should we know in that village? Only two people, Belen and Mr. Escubio. So we followed up Belen, but she wasn't there, and not only when we did see her subsequently, she wasn't terribly interested in the gospel. But we got to know her sister. Her sister became our language teacher, and through a various process of interlocking chain of events, the sister eventually became a Christian, went through Bible school in Manila, and sort of became a missionary in her own right. All because my wife spoke to her sister, and that's how we got to meet Vilma. I sat next to Mr. Scubio, and so we went to visit his place. And Mr. Scubio was a bit of a dud. He was a no-hoper, wasted his money, didn't support his wife. He wasn't loyal to his wife. When we met him, he was returning from Manila from seeing his number two. Roman Catholic country doesn't allow divorce and remarriage, and so they just have a second wife, and that's it. And the wife wasn't terribly impressed with the husband. And she was a bit of a woebegone sort of person. And we started our first Bible study in her home. And the last I saw of Mr. Scubia, we had him around for tea and had a yarn to him, but he wasn't terribly interested. Although he was wistful. He did want to change, but, you know, he just wasn't prepared for it. And the last I saw of him, he wanted to borrow about 20 pesos from me to go and visit his illegal wife in Manila. Fancy coming round to the missionary. He wanted to borrow money from me to go and see his number two. That's the last I saw of him. But the Bible study in the wife's home went well. But Mrs. Escubio, she didn't respond. She came very close. But the next door neighbour, Mrs. Cesar, she opened right up to the gospel. Again, she was married to a no-hoper who never supported her. You might think I'm exaggerating here, but I used to think Filipino men, when they gave their testimony, were sort of, you know, laying on a bit thick, giving a sort of a Hollywood-type testimony of how wild they were before they came to Christ. But it's true. Irresponsible to the last degree. And she had a no-hoping husband. And she responds to the gospel and believes, and only just recently has been baptised and admitted into the church. Isn't it lovely? And her husband has believed as well. Isn't that good? And it all happens out of sitting next to a no-hoper in the Jeep. You know, one thing follows another. You know, Philip down there on the road to Gaza. Now, the Spirit of God is leading you sometimes when you're not even aware of it. Now, that's sort of one little process. There's more to that, and I've sort of got to condense it for this occasion. Now, one day in Manila, in the last 2 years of our work there, I'm walking down the street, one time, and here's this fellow sort of, he's walking up the street to case the place, really, and I got in a conversation with him, and he was a tough guy. This is the local shakedown man. And he started telling me of his wild escapades, and I told him what a nong he was. And he was a tough guy. I don't think people would tell him that sort of thing. And he was in the US Marines at that stage. Now, this is the local shakedown merchant. He protected your house. And if you didn't pay him 20 pesos a day, he came back and protected your windows with a shanghai and some sawn-off pieces of bolt. And the mayor, he knew everybody there was around the place. He knew the police, he knew the mayor, he knew the local judge. This is in Pasay City. And there is no way that you could corner this character. And he just did as he pleased. Well, they got him out of the road. The mayor of Pasay City got him a job in the US Marines, and so off to Vietnam he went. But he didn't like it there, so he got into the black market, and he was smuggling Armalite rifles to the Viet Cong until the CIA caught him and belted the daylights out of him. Did they bash him? And he lied his way out of it. And, well, you know, Vietnam was a bit too tough for him, so he bribes the doctor 1,000 pesos. That's a lot of money. And he got cirrhosis of the liver. And I'm exaggerating. It was under 1,000 pesos. Anyhow, he got cirrhosis of the liver for his money. And he was on a full US Navy pension. It was a fabulous sum for the 2 years that I met him, just having a ball in Manila. And he fritted all his money away on wild, literally women, you know, wine, women, and song. And he's around to try and borrow money from me. And I virtually became this fellow's sort of father confessor. And he used to stand your hair on end, some of the things he used to do. And I didn't want him to tell me these things, but he'd come around and tell me the details, the gory details, and I'd sort of get stuck into him. And he'd tell me I could come around to his place any time I liked, provided I didn't preach to him. He kicked the Mormons out. And I used to go around to his place and preach to him all the same, and he got booted out. And he'd come around and see me all the same. And at that stage, he went into a tailoring business, and the business went broke, and the man who owned the property tried to put pressure on him and evict him. And Greg wasn't going to be thrown out. Greg comes along, and for this man's trouble, brings some friends with him and smashes his quarter-inch plate glass windows for his trouble. And I think, well, what the dickens these great holes in these windows for? Greg had been at work. And so the fellow takes him to court, and Greg goes to court, and Greg bribes the fiscal, that's like sort of the district prosecutor, he bribes him 1,000 pesos and has the case thrown out for lack of evidence. And then he takes the owner of the property to court and has got him up for defamation of character, and he reads out the charges, you know, and he said how his father couldn't sleep because, you know, this scandal about his son, and he turns to him and laughs and says what a lot of garbage it is, and reads this great charge. And he had that property owner pass the lower courts into the higher court, and it was worth quite a few thousand pesos to drop the charges. Then an ironical thing happened. Another local criminal and him have a confrontation, and Greg this time is innocent, and Greg's about to be thrown into jail. And was he screaming? And this other tough guy and Greg are having this knockdown, drag-out fight, and members of our church are innocently framed up in the whole situation. And it's great having a Bible study with somebody, and their son's been in jail a couple of weeks, and he's not been washed and not been fed and just, you know, neglected. And you say, oh, well, God bless you. Yes, we're praying for you. Was that, you know, is this all that a missionary should do? You know, how far should you get involved?
How far should you get involved? Particularly when the poor people are involved. Well, anyhow, this sort of dragged on and so it went. And Greg Benchley was far too sharp and he got out of that one. Oh, he was doing a law degree, by the way. He was doing a law degree. He was bribing his way through a degree. He was getting his degree through bribery. He had enough natural ability to get through on his, without having to bribe his way through. But we had an evangelistic meeting where we started off this little church in Manila, and the path of the meeting was marked by stubbed out cigarettes. And Greg came with his little three-year-old boy. He had a cigarette between his fingers just to make a good impression for me, dressed in very expensive gear. And Greg sat down the back of the meeting and laughed the whole meeting through. And the top line Filipino evangelist, and Greg gave me three or four good reasons where he was offside, and he was right too. He was right. But black was white, and white was black. He would not stop at anything, even murder. Had he just given the word, he could have had this other tough guy in the neighbourhood just shot. His friends would have done it for him. You know, completely reverse values. Now, I used to reason with this fellow, and I told him that if he ever became a Christian, he'd have to make amends, and he'd have to make restitution. And he wasn't ready for it. He wasn't ready for it. He came very close to the kingdom of God. His best friend got converted, and he said, "Gee, what's happened to Eddie? Oh, he's a changed man." And that's true. Eddie was a changed man. And Greg came so close, and then he backed off. But my wife started having a Bible study with his wife, and another Filipino lass. And they used to go around to Greg's place and have Bible study in his home with his wife. And the outcome was that the wife eventually believed. She'd had enough of the perversity of sinful human nature. I mean, Greg spent all his time and money with women down on the strip, as we call it. And the wife knew that she was, a number two. But she believed. She believed. And do you know what she was? She was a prostitute from an American airbase. And they weren't even married at that stage. And when she became a Christian, they are married. So you don't win them all. You don't win them all. But God just works in various ways, and this one is bypassed, and this one comes to Christ. And so this is how missionary work is done. You know, missionary work functions the same way overseas as, Christian work functions here. The world doesn't beat a path to our door. If the missionary is not prepared to be friendly, well then, the process sort of stops there. And if we're not prepared to be friendly and approach people here, well then the process will stop. And missionary work is a mixture of divinely sort of ordained, you might almost seem accidental circumstances, but God is pleased to use it for his glory. Thank you very much.